Hey there, welcome to this episode of the Podcast Manager Show. I'm so excited that you hit play because we are chatting with Amber Duggar today about how we can ensure that we are profitable in our podcast management businesses. Now, Amber talks us through how we can use the profit first mindset with the popular tool You Need a Budget and some other great practices, all bringing that together into one system to ensure that we are profitable in our businesses. All right, let's jump into this conversation with Amber about profit. Hey there, I'm Lauren, and you're listening to the Podcast Manager Show, a podcast for podcast managers. Each week, we cover the technical and tactical aspects of running a profitable podcast manager business. With over 90,000 new shows starting each month, podcast managers are in demand. I mean, in demand. And I'm here to help you land your dream clients while reaching your monthly income goals without working like crazy. Are you ready? Let's get to today's episode. Amber, it is so great to have you on the show today.
Lauren, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Okay. So, you know, our listeners, our podcast managers that are here, they got into being a freelancer because they need to make profit, right? They need to make money. They want to bring money into their life, their family, whatever it may be. But they also want to do something that they really enjoy. And they want to have both, right? So I'd love to know how you have helped entrepreneurs make sure that they're making profit in their business consistently?
That's such a great question. And I just want to thank everyone that's listening to this because I know clicking on a podcast episode around money means that you have an incredible amount of courage and also just wanting to be empowered in this area. And so just know that that's going to happen today in this conversation. And it all starts with exactly what you just asked. I'll start back with myself. When I started, I was actually a health coach. I had left the financial industry. And I knew that being in this mastermind of 50 other health coaches, I realized that there were only three other people in that entire group that needed to make money to actually sustain themselves and pay themselves and be self-sustaining. And so we created our own little group because I said, look, I need to be making, you know, $8,000 months. And we were working on $5,000 months. And I knew for myself, I needed $8,000. And that's one of the first things is recognizing that every single person has a different revenue goal based on their own personal life, their own desires, what really makes them happy. And so it's not about the amount of money that we need to make, but it actually is about what are the resources that are going to really provide me the life where I just am living and I'm present and I'm enjoying myself and I'm not spending contaminated time thinking about money. So very early on, I reverse engineered my own revenue goal. And that's how this all started to really come about was while I was living in Bali, I was just talking to so many people and really combining the health coaching and the financial background that I had into a very balanced, holistic, really the masculine, feminine sides of money coming together. And that is really where you no longer think about money because it's simply a neutral resource. It's not meant to be something that we're constantly worrying about or thinking about or stressing about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I'm sure, you know, we all can understand like you said, it doesn't matter how much money you have. If you're going to stress about money, you're going to stress about it when you're making $1,000 a month. You're going to stress about it when you're making $10,000 a month.
Yes.
So I love that there. I can see a lot of crossover between the health and the finance, because like you're saying with this holistic approach. So what do you find maybe for someone who is kind of in this masculine mindset around money of like, okay, need to hit this certain amount of money, and they're very focused and driven on hitting certain numbers. How can they balance that with more of a feminine understanding or mindset around money?
Oh, that's a great question. So I come from a very masculine background. My father is a theoretical physicist, and we had encyclopedias next to our dining room table. I mean, we were always looking things up. So I started out as an entrepreneur in a place where I really truly had never heard of wealth consciousness. I had never heard of the feminine side of money. And at first, I have to admit, I just thought it was a bunch of, you know, hogwash.
Hoopla.
Yeah. And so it took a bit of time to actually experience it myself and then see So many of my clients have these incredible things happen to them where I started to really employ that. And I think we all know as entrepreneurs that this is one of the most amazing self-development journeys where you really get to know yourself. And so I think it's different for everyone. Some people, they actually have much more of the feminine aspect and they actually have trouble bringing money in or receiving money. Others have no problem receiving money, but also spend more of it than they're receiving. So we all have a different paradigm around money. But the first thing is just to become more aware with it and just allow it to be whatever it is without judgment. We have, unfortunately, a lot of shame and guilt that's mixed in with all of this because of past choices. And I always like to remind everyone that we have always made great choices because we made these choices with the information that we had at hand, and nothing happens on accident. It's to either learn a lesson or to understand something more clearly. And so looking back on these things, we can say, oh, well, I'm so grateful I had the opportunity to use my credit card when I didn't have money. You know, I was able to still put food on the table. And thinking of it from that perspective, I think can really allow us to move away from the shame and the guilt. And so the first step I would say is really just allowing yourself some grace and forgive yourself for anything that you feel you're being hard on. And I know that's super easy to say and more of a process to actually do, but one thing that I love doing is Ho'oponopono. Have you heard of that practice?
No.
It's from Hawaii, and it's a very simple four-statement process. And you can say this to yourself over and over again in the mirror in the morning. And it just says, I am sorry. Please forgive me. I love you. Thank you.
Mm.
And it's a very powerful practice that allows this energy to start to emit from you where you truly are. You don't even need to know what you're apologizing for. You don't need to have something in mind. Just stating it out loud will raise your vibration and allow yourself to go about your day with a new sense of empowerment and feeling a fresh sense of grace as well. So there's so many things I could talk to you about with this subject, but I would say just start listening to things like this and, you know, start to educate and empower yourself around this and recognize that we are coming into an age where, yes, the financial and educational industry have failed us. We did not learn this as children. We did not necessarily learn this in high school or college, but we now have the opportunity in this information age to completely change our paradigm. And I'm seeing so many incredible people that never thought they would ever understand or be good with money actually feel excited to look at it, to be talking about it, and to be changing and breaking this generational cycle of not knowing more about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that you just said, like, really just even spending some time in acknowledging what your own thoughts are around money and what are, like, when you're listening to interviews, when you're, you know, doing some of this initial investigation into your own thoughts around money, you can just start with saying, oh, you know, these are some of my hangups before you even have to tackle them and, you know, feel like you have to fix everything and you think about all the things that you have to change or whatever. It's like just acknowledging, you know, where you're coming from, maybe some of the things that you heard a lot as a kid or like past choices that you've made that, you know, that you said. So you can kind of see some of my past choices or maybe my upbringing is why I kind of maybe find myself in a certain loop around my money.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's such a beautiful process because by doing that, you're really allowing yourself to recognize, oh, I'm human. I will always have certain things around money and certain things around other things until we move on. That's part of this human experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that really blew my mind when I first learned that, wow, okay, this isn't about releasing all money blocks. This is about moving through them with ease and efficiency and awareness that, oh yeah, that's there. And in this circumstance, I can use discernment and I know that that's not something I need to be concerned about.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I think that is common with freelancers is that we have a hard time separating ourselves as people and our businesses mm-hmm. because we're selling a service. We're selling our time, our expertise. So of course, then, you know, when you're making a lot of money, you can feel really great about yourself. And then you're making less money and you're feeling not so great about yourself. So do you have any words of wisdom for starting to separate this is who I am as a human, and then this is my business?
Oh, I love this question. So first of all, anyone that's resonating with this, just know that no matter what you do, what you have, where you come from, you are all infinitely valuable. There is not a price tag for you. You are not worth what you do. And this is something that we were conditioned as children. I was definitely conditioned this way to really think of what I do as a certain amount of money. So am I getting paid what I'm worth? And that is something that I will never, ever say. I will never say, oh, you're getting paid what you're worth. Because like I said, we're all infinitely valuable. Now, this thing blew my mind when I first heard this. And so this, I always give credit where credit's due. This is not my original thought. This is from Michael Hyatt. It was an interview probably 10 years ago. And he was getting interviewed by some guy and a similar question was asked. And he said, I want you to think about the fact that you are doing something that is naturally easy for you or that works with the environment that you're living. So as a podcast manager, you're naturally good at tech. You're naturally good at figuring out how to integrate systems together. You're naturally good at the art of actually editing the podcast, those types of things. So, and working with people and bringing people in, like there's just so many things that I would say is not necessarily a typical person's skill set. You have a lot of different talents that you're putting all together into something that many people, you're either very well known in your in the fact that people that are, have podcasts know there are podcast managers. And then when you're at a party on Friday night, you just say you have an online business because no one understands, right?
So yes,
it's like that. But the thing is, it comes naturally to you. You are never going to pay for someone else to do what you're doing unless you truly are at a point where I value my time more than me doing my own podcast. I could see you paying for it at that point, but you're not going to do it when you're first starting out. You're going to do it yourself. I don't like bookkeeping, but I did my own bookkeeping for the first 3 years of my business because I knew how to do it. I now pay for that. That's the type of thing that I don't value necessarily that service in the beginning of my business, but now I value it because now I don't want to spend my time on it. So we're thinking about the actual impact that we value. So then you want to think about something. What is something that you're struggling with? It might be, you know, copy, or it might be, you know, learning how to do Facebook ads. We will pay as long as we have the confidence that that person is going to bring us to the place that we want to be faster, more efficiently, and more effectively than if we did it on our own. And that's the value that we're putting on the service of the person providing that Facebook ads management. So that's the beginning step, is just asking yourself, okay, what is this person valuing? And how would I feel if I didn't know how to do any of this? What would I pay to have this solved? And that's how we can start separating our value from our what we do and who we are.
Mm-hmm. So really, really focusing your mind on the value that your service is bringing to the client's business versus, I guess, your value as a human and like them liking you or wanting to hire you. Like that's who you are as a person. And I think that can play a role in why someone might hire you. But ultimately, they're paying for your service. They're not paying for you. And yeah, it gets kind of muddy, right?
It can. There's also the experience, right? So mm-hmm. You can have two completely different podcast managers. And one podcast manager can be super outgoing and bubbly and, you know, shares a lot about their weekend and things like that. And for some clients, that is exactly what they're looking for. They want someone who has that warmth and that connection. You can take another client who is really strapped for time, doesn't really care about the weekend plans, really wants to get things done, and is kind, but brief. And they mm-hmm. want brevity. They want a 10-minute meeting, and that's like the best thing ever for them. So you just have to know what kind of client you want to work with, and then you're going to attract those based on who you are and what you bring outside of your service. So I think it can definitely mesh in, but that's just being you, and that's just being authentically you. And that's something that I think really helps bring in more and more clients like that, is when you're really clear on who you want to be working with and being clear on saying no to those that you don't, even if you have client spaces available, and mm-hmm. saying, you know what? No. I know I want to work with someone who is bubbly and who does spend a little bit more time talking to me because that's just who I am. I feel, you know, kind of slighted, even if that's not their intention. You know, that could be one person. So it's just looking at the bigger picture of what does my experience want to look like? And bringing aspects of your personality in is really important, but it's not necessarily going to change the amount of money someone's paying. As long as it's aligned, it's about the service and that experience is part of that.
Yeah, no, that's so helpful. And it makes me think of maybe someone who's more introverted or more shy, or maybe the podcast manager that's more strapped for time. And they think maybe that they're providing less of a service because they're not warm and fuzzy. And just naturally, they're not warm and fuzzy. And it's, you have to remind yourself, like, no, that's what certain clients are looking for. They don't need to love your personality per se, or, you know, need to hear about your weekend plans and stuff. It's like there's a good fit for everyone.
Absolutely. I think it's amazing. And just imagine, you know, if you've been thinking you needed to be a certain way and you really are a different way, and you start giving yourself permission to show up as you and really claiming it. And even if it's different, that's even better. You know, I had one profit first professional that I know, she would marker herself with, RBF, which I don't know if that's okay to say on here.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. But she actually would say that. She's like, I'm a nice person, but I am not going to be tons of smiles. And if you want that, don't work with me. And she attracted some incredible people that were just like, thank goodness, you know, like, I just want a real person. I don't want all these smiles and all this stuff. And then other people wouldn't like that. So it's just, there's always going to be someone for you as long as you really show up as yourself.
Yeah, totally. Also, when you kind of lead, like when you're authentic in your marketing with who you are, then when someone gets on a call with you to see, to talk about your services, they're like, oh yeah, this is who I'm expecting. Versus if you're like all smiles and you're really trying really hard in your marketing, and then they get on a call with you and they're like, she has RBF. It can be a disconnect. And like you said, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's like, wait, why? Like, yeah, it's okay to be who you are. That's a whole different conversation of just like, sometimes we think, even in the financial world, especially, like you can feel like you have to be professional in whatever that means, right?
Right.
Whatever that looks like to you. It's like, oh, well, you know, if as podcast managers, if we're working with maybe like mom podcasters, we sometimes think we have to be like all warm and fuzzy and talk about our kids and things. And it's like, not necessarily.
Right. It might be the one conversation that the person's looking forward to having that has nothing to do with their children, you know, I get to talk about my business right now. So yeah. Absolutely. So I think that really the big takeaway of this is, you know, show up as yourself, give yourself permission to be yourself, be clear on the type of person you want to work with, and be okay saying no to the person that you know would just be that client that gives you a lot of stress. I used a monitor on my watch for a while just to test it out, because I'm really careful who I take on as private clients, because at this point, I really like to just make sure they're exactly the type of person I want to be spending my time with. And if stress went up at all, then that would be an indication, okay, this may not be the best fit for me. And I didn't even realize it. So sometimes it's a little bit more subtle. So using some things like that can also be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, tying this all together, your service is valued, you know, price point wise, it's valued at a specific number, and it doesn't matter if you have a certain personality or not. That's kind of what, That's really interesting to just think of that all together. Hey, before we continue with this episode, I wanted to ask you something. If there was a way that you could make $5,000 per month as a podcast manager without taking on a million clients, is that something that you'd be interested in? If so, I have great news for you. We have a brand new masterclass that teaches you how you can make $5,000 per month as a podcast manager without taking on a million clients. In this class, we are covering the skills and the systems that every podcast manager needs to know to land high-paying clients so that you can make $5,000 per month and beyond. You'll also learn the mistakes that I was making and I see podcast managers continue to make that keep them from profit. So If you are nodding your head, yes, tell me more, Lauren, then go to laurenwrighton.com/masterclass to get a seat in the masterclass this week. You can find that link in the show notes. I'll see you there. Now, I would love to talk about cash flow. Yeah. And I know that's something that you talk about when I was, you know, first being introduced to you. So how does cash flow? Well, I guess let me start by saying that, you know, we as freelancers, we don't have a lot of expenses per se versus maybe some other businesses. Our marketing budget can be smaller, but we still need to make decisions to help us grow our businesses, right? So we still need to make some decisions. Our bookkeeping is simpler, which is nice. But how can we look at our money to make sure that we have the cash flow to make certain decisions?
That's a great question. So I first want to just give a little foundation to this question, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. So when I first started out as a health coach, there was a lot of confusion around what I was doing with my money. When I was in co-working spaces in Bali and people were asking me to do skill shares on the money system I was using. And so I want to just differentiate the difference between bookkeeping, taxes, and cash flow, and financial planning for that matter. So bookkeeping is for someone to just document everything that goes in and out of your business so that you can determine how much you pay in taxes. And so that accountant typically is that person. Sometimes it's the same person, but the accountant, his or her responsibility is to check for any changes in tax code. And so they want to make sure that you're not paying a penny more, a penny less in taxes. So those are those two roles. And you want to outsource those as quickly as possible if you can, because it's just not really the best use of most entrepreneurs' time unless you really love bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. Then there's personal finance or financial planners, and they're taking money that you have saved and help you invest it for the long term, for retirement or for, you know, later in life, or just to build your money and have your money make money. So those are those three different roles. The reason I believe that we have so much trouble with cash flow is we don't actually have a separate entity that talks about it. We can talk about a CFO, but a CFO, in my experience, is almost always dealing with the accounting side and the mess ups of the software itself, and not necessarily looking forward. So those are the three differences between bookkeeping, accounting, and financial planning. Now, cash flow, and the reason that I think that there isn't a lot of emphasis on cash flow is the CFO is typically looking backwards. It's looking at the accounting, looking at accounting software issues. They're not looking forward. Now, all of us as visionaries, as entrepreneurs, as individuals who want autonomy in our life, in our time, in our business, and how we're spending our day, we are natural visionaries. So we're looking forward. So I like to think of cash flow as looking forward. And it's really more about organizing the money that's coming into your business and it being very practical of, you know, if we didn't have bank accounts, we didn't have credit cards, and it was just all coming in at our desk every day, how are we using it? Where are we putting it? What do we want to use it for? So when I first started out as a health coach, I had very minimal expenses. I think I paid for acuity scheduling, I paid for a hosting service, and I think MoonClerk to take payments. And that was about it. But I also had expenses at home, I had expenses in Bali. And so I was wanting to make sure that I could keep everything organized. So all of that led to being able to look at money a little bit differently in that, okay, when you have money coming into your business, you want to be able to separate it into four main purposes. You want intentional profit, because we want to be profitable from day one. You want to have money going to your owner's pay. This is components of profit first that I'm sharing right now. Mm-hmm. You want to put a portion to being able to pay your personal taxes, because any profitable business is going to owe taxes at the end of the year. And then the last part is overhead for your business. And even if they're minimal, you still want that money separated so that you have that money to pay for. And then also, if you decide, you know what, I finally want to hire a podcast manager for myself, mm-hmm, then you can put that in there and you can see how that changes your revenue goal. So I would say that that's really one of the main things, is having a reverse engineered revenue goal that implements with the things that you matter to you most. Because the other thing is, you may want to pay for all of your expenses. you may want to contribute a certain amount towards the household expenses. You may want to make even more than your expenses to be able to put money towards certain things that you have itemized or decided that you want to be saving for. So everyone has different needs, but it's just important for us to know what they are so that we can start to look at our pricing. We can look at our goals and how many clients we want to be working with. How much time do we want to be spending with clients so that it can all align in a way that works for you and your situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if we were to look at our financial goals and what we want to do with the money when it comes in, I'm familiar with Profit First, and that I've liked Profit First because it's simple. It's like you said, like four buckets. But what happens when you start to like make the notes for yourself and it's like, okay, I want to send this money into savings and I'm going to put this money into taxes and then I'm going to pay myself this. And then I've got my, like it starts to get more complex. Can you still use this profit first mindset of taking the money you've made first and putting it places when you have more than like four buckets, right?
Yes, that's so great that you noticed that, because I also noticed that when I first started out, because I was doing this without knowing it was a thing. And I was using something that I'd used for many years before starting a business. It was an envelope system for my personal finances. So I was using You Need a Budget, or it stands YNAB for short. So I had always been using that. So I decided just to create a separate budget for that. And so even though I had a financial degree, I had 15 years of corporate finance experience. When I received my first $800 payment from my first client, I had no idea what to do with it. So I just put it in the separate bank account and I put it in a line and I said, okay, well, I know I'm going to need to pay taxes on it. So I put a certain portion away for taxes and that was it. So very quickly, I knew I needed to do something different. My business coach said, you know, this self-published book just came out. It was like back in 2015. She said, I think you might like it. I read three chapters of Profit First and I was like, okay, this is amazing, but most people in my situation don't have 3 years of financial statements and they don't have, you know, this really complicated business model where they have all these different expenses. I just want to know how much do I need to make so I can cover all these things and make money and be profitable. Mm-hmm. So that's where I implemented, I would say, much more of a direct system to get to that number versus making micro adjustments the way the book talks about. And so the program that we do now called Profit for Keeps basically takes that situation, allows you to organize all of your expenses. You reverse engineer the goal, which gives you unique profit first percentages. So instead of having to micro adjust, you're actually using the percentages based on your situation. So if you want to pay yourself $5,000 a month, you want to put aside 20% for taxes, you want to have 5% for profit, and you have, you know, a certain amount for business expenses, this calculator will actually figure that out for you. So you can say, okay, I have $10,000 that I have as a main goal, of which 50% is going to go to owner's pay and 5% is going to go to profit. And so every time you make money in your business, you're able to separate it. But by using that software, instead of having a ton of bank accounts, you just use one bank account, but you can just actually organize it. So when I first got started, I had a business one that had profit, owner's pay, taxes. And then instead of business expenses, I had a whole separate section. So it had Acuity. It had, I started using Meet Edgar very early on. And it was just little things like that that I could start to put aside money for. And then I could see when I could afford to bring on a VA. And I could see when I could afford to bring on some of those additional team members, because I had started to put aside money for that position using the envelope system. So any envelope system is, in my opinion, much better than using the bank accounts. Mike Michalowicz is a good friend of mine. He is the author of this book. And he said, yeah, if I had known these software things existed, I probably would have written this differently, because we don't need all these bank accounts for some businesses. Some businesses, it's helpful, but definitely for a podcast manager, an envelope system is the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you say an envelope system, do you literally mean still, like, I'm thinking of Dave Ramsey and his system of personal finance is literal envelopes, literal cash. So explain, like, when we talk about cash flow, are we talking about cash in our hand, literally, or are we talking about just categorization on a Google sheet?
Great. question. Okay, so Dave Ramsey, you know, there are people that really do well with his system. So there's no, you know, knocking on his system. Mm-hmm. For entrepreneurs, typically I find it doesn't work very well because it is this rice and beans. They actually promote rice and beans. I mean, they're like, you know, go as low as you can go. And that works for some people, just like boot camps work for some people. But other people like bar or Pilates or something else. So yeah. There's something for everybody. But what I find is that entrepreneurs are much more expansive thinkers. And so it's more about learning what is the paradigm that I've been carrying and what do I want to shift and how do I want to show up for my business, for my clients, for my family. And so it looks a little different. And so, yes, the actual system is quite similar. It's something that our grandmothers used where they had a shoebox and they had envelopes and cash was much more of the normal currency. Mm-hmm. But they did studies and it showed that as soon as we started using credit cards, our consumer debt skyrocketed. And it's not because all of a sudden we decided, you know what, we don't care about money anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going to buy whatever I want.
Yeah. It's not that. There is something in the brain that happens when and I'm not a brain scientist, so I'm not going to go into the science of it, but I know mm-hmm. that the impact of it is that if we were in person and I hand you, you know, something that you want to purchase, like let's say you want this special edition Yeti pink slider thing on the top. And you say, oh my gosh, those aren't in production anymore. I will pay you $50 for your Yeti cup. Okay, great. So you hand me $50 and I give you my cup. We feel this even exchange. You're happy with the cup. I'm happy with the $50 and we move on. Now, what happens is if you decide to purchase this with a credit card, you hand me the credit card. I swipe it. I hand you the credit card back and the cup. So you've now just gotten rewarded for purchasing this cup because you've gotten what you gave me back as well as getting the cup. And that, they believe, has a lot to do with why debt has gone up, because we don't see it, we don't feel it, we don't see the money leaving our hands. And they're saying that even now with these magic wands that we have, and for those listening, I'm holding up my Apple Watch, you can now just swipe it. So you don't even have to give me anything for me to give you this cup. And mm-hmm. so it's about becoming more familiar with your money again. So I like to think of it this way. If I have a $100 bill in my pocket, for some reason, that just feels like, dang, I have a lot of money, $100 bill.
For sure.
Right? Yeah. But, and even a $20 bill can feel good, like having 20s in your pocket. But if you go to go to lunch with a friend and the bill is $22 and you pay for it with a credit card and you sign and you give the tip, it doesn't feel like it's that much. Oh, lunch was only $28, whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if you're having to hand over two 20s, that feels different. It's just something that's like, that feels more valuable. Like, oh, I don't want to pay with cash. I'm going to use my card because I want to keep the cash just in case I need it for something else, right? So this is just natural human behavior. And this is something that we have had for centuries, is this trading of things. And it's just been the last 50 years that we have stopped trading tangible things. Even though money is intangible, we have had a tangible representation for most of our existence. So it's now looking at the envelope system gives us that tangible aspect back in our electronic world. So instead of having the jars or the envelopes and the cash, which some people really do need that, and that works great, and Dave Ramsey has figured that out. But for many of us, I like to think of it as a sauna for my money. So Asana, the task management system where you can just see all of your tasks, or a Trello board, something like that, where you're just seeing everything. It feels so good to feel so organized and look at all of that. And it's the same thing with your cash. Instead of having the one number in your bank account, I don't even know exactly what that number is because I'm looking at the amount that's in each area of my business and each area of my personal life. And that helps me stay accountable. So even if, for example, if I have a client, let's say they are making $120,000 a month and they're paying themselves $25,000 and they're then looking at, okay, well, I've put $2,000 aside for groceries. Well, if they have spent more than $2,000 on groceries, they're going to know by using the system because they look at it. And the thing is, I have a YouTube video and it's called Why YNAB Doesn't Work. And if you'd like, I can send you a link to that for you to link below.
Because for sure.
This video, it has really taken over why so many people say it doesn't work, because it's not a tracking system. It's not like Mint. It's there to help you make decisions. So if I put $500 a month in dining, and my husband and I do a date night every Friday night. Last Friday, actually, we had $53 left in that line, and we have an extra Friday this month. Now, we have absolutely every right to go in and find money from another envelope and move it if we want to. And I asked him, I said, okay, so we have $53 left. Do you want to go out next Friday, or do you want to do something more like pokey pokey, which is like a, it's like one of those, it's almost like Chipotle for poke bowls.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's more like maybe $40. I said, so we could go do that, or I can move money. What do you want to do? And he says, well, you know, I think it'd be really fun for us to go utilize our float membership, and then maybe we can have some leftovers at home. So that's what we're going to do. But it was a small conversation, but it's allowing us to make that decision regardless of how much money is in the bank account or what else mm-hmm. is there. It's just allowing us to stay accountable to what we decided we wanted for our family. And we also have the opportunity to change that at any time. And so that's what I would say a modern envelope system is. It's more about giving yourself permission to either spend or not spend your money.
Yeah. And I'm guessing, like, just from the way that you're describing this specific situation, it's like, it's fun. It sounds like it's more fun to make that decision instead of just to, like, not be aware of it and say, nope, we go out every single Friday night and, you know, we have money for it. It works out, right? Financially, it works out at the end of the month. Instead of just kind of being unintentional, I guess you could say, when you're intentional about it, you can say, yeah, we can move money there, but we also could do something different. You get that opportunity, like you said, to make a small decision.
Exactly. And as you're talking, it's making me think of a time that I was working with a client who was in a place in their business where they were basically moving back revenue. So they had clients who would pay them for 6 months of service at the beginning of the 6 months. And what was happening is they were spending all that money before they were finished implementing the service. And then they weren't able to take on new clients until that service was completed. Ooh. So one of the things that we do is help have that revenue cover the entire time by holding. So that's another way you can use the envelope system is actually putting, let's say it's $50,000 for 6 months. You put that $50,000 in a line, and then each month you implement, you know, six of it into your actual budget. Mm-hmm. So he was in the process of figuring that out. And he said, you know, Amber, I had the best date night, and I never would have thought about this in this creative way. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do this if I hadn't been doing this system, because we decided, since we didn't want to move money from other areas that were a priority for our family, they live in California. And so they went to the cliffs and they overlooked the water and they brought a picnic. And he said, it was one of the most romantic nights that I've had with my wife in a really long time. So like you said, it has us think about things differently and look at things from a different perspective. And it's not about saying no to dinner next Friday. It's just about deciding, you know what, we really want to go to Mexico and we don't really want to take money from that line, and we're totally fine. And we're going to have fun floating because we haven't done that in a few months. So it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking of an example of how I could see this happening in a podcast manager's business, of maybe they've been really into trying out new tools like AI tools and different softwares. And they find a new software and they're like, oh, I said I was only going to spend $50 on all these trials this month or whatever. But it's going to save me so much time and I really want to try it out. But I also want to make, you know, I'm good at paying myself $5,000, but I haven't been able to get over, you know, to $6,000 because I'm spending it on other things. So I'm going to hold myself accountable to not buying a new AI software so I can pay myself more at the end of the month.
Absolutely. And you'll be able to see that by looking at the lines in your budget and saying, and I actually call budget an expansive spending plan, but I always like to use the word because it makes it easier to understand that, oh, that's what she's talking about. But you can look at that and you can say, okay, I've already spent 40. I have 10 more dollars. This trial is 30. I don't know if I really need this because I can do these things that I've already done. And it gives you an opportunity to really see what you value and what you need now going forward versus what happened last year. Because that's what budgets have historically been based on, And that's not how we operate as a business. We're always looking to evolve and grow and change and, you know, become better. And that requires us mm-hmm. to always look at what does the business need now, not 12 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering, with some expenses that we know in our businesses that are reoccurring, maybe, you know, a software that we do pay for monthly that we have an option to pay for annually to save money, how can we use, like, have cash flow in mind, but also save ourselves money by buying, you know, buying an annual subscription to something that we know we're going to use?
Yeah, I love that. So that's what's called a true expense. And so think about, like, I pay for Kajabi every year, but I pay for it in November. So I take the full amount. And then YNAB actually lets you set a goal for yourself. So you can say, okay, I need to pay $2,000 in November. So then every single month, you're basically paying the monthly fee that's lower that they advertise on their little scale of three prices. But it allows you to put that cash aside every month so it builds over the full 12 months. So then when November comes around, yes, you've put a couple hundred dollars towards it that month, but you have the $2,000 to pay. And that makes it so much easier to manage when you have certain things like that. So we have a rule in our company that that we do a month to month until we're certain this is something we want and that we're going to utilize for the foreseeable future. And then we will purchase the annual plan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like your profit for keeps, is it a combination of profit first, YNAB, and I'm sure some other things that you've picked up along the way? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's basically balancing the masculine and feminine sides of money. So it takes everything that you really want in your life and allows you to really come up with a practical list of the resources required for that or the expenses required for that. And then you reverse engineer your revenue goal. And then those become the templates for YNAB for your personal and business budgets. So it mm-hmm. allows you to not only focus on profit first for your business, but really most of us have had very little foundation on the personal side. And so when we have a business, it can just compound that frustration. So we always start with that first is the personal side because we're more familiar with it. It allows you to really learn the software. And many people have tried the software before and felt like, oh, I did not get that. And so we love being able to show that, no, you totally can do this. And then they get that and then they move on to the business. And then it's combined with that plus looking at forecasts of the client payments you're going to have, how much cash in this month versus your revenue goal. What tweaks you need to make sure that ongoing you're meeting or exceeding your goals so that you can start to really hone in on some of the bigger things that you're wanting your business to put money towards. So all of that together.
Love that. And we can't not talk about accountability, because I think in our, just as an entrepreneur, you know, some of us, especially if we're like definitely visionaries, we're good at being like the CEO and we're bad at being the employee. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's the opposite, right? Like we're good at like getting the tasks done, but it's hard for us to see the trees among the, what's the saying?
The forest through the trees.
Yeah, the forest through the trees. So, you know, depending on who we are, and of course there's everything in between, but depending on who we are, is there some accountability to make sure that we are following through? Like, our best intentions want us to do this, but then, you know, what type of accountability do you recommend so we can follow through on what we really want?
Accountability partners are the number one way to go, in my opinion. And I think everyone has a different way of being held accountable. Like you were saying, some people don't have that problem, but maybe they just don't want to do it. So I have my wedding band that's an heirloom from my husband's mother. And my best friend was here last month. And she says, you haven't gotten that appraised yet? And I said, no, I keep putting it off. She says, I am going to text you in 3 weeks. You know, the next day I was out and getting it ready to be done. And so when she called me yesterday, I was like, guess what?
Yeah.
You know, so it can help for things that you just don't want to do. And money is typically something we don't want to look at. So we definitely encourage people to set up accountability groups or accountability partners. We also have a lot of group calls that people can come and get support and get help with each other. But I find that I have made the best business connections in group programs with other mm-hmm. people that are participating. And so we always encourage the accountability partner piece, because it just, one, you can make a really good friend from it. And two, it just helps you stay on track.
Yeah, Yeah, I totally agree. I've made all of my longer lasting business connections and friends have been through programs like that, where you're in the same mind space at a certain time in life, right? Like you're like, okay, I'm focusing on my money. So I'm in this group where other people are focusing on their money. And so you have that in common and you can, but then you can, like you said, you can become real business friends from there. And plus there's something magical whenever you're holding each other accountable. You're like, man, I appreciate you so much because you're helping me get stuff done. It's a good foundational piece of a friendship.
Absolutely. It's really beautiful. Yeah. I mean, we've seen some incredible friendships and partnerships come out of it, which has been really nice.
Yeah. 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 I'm sure some people have probably started like businesses together. You never know where.
Surprise.
Right. Amber, this has been so great. I think that this is going to be really helpful for everyone listening, of just thinking through how some of the masculine stuff that we've talked about comes into play with more of feminine energy, you know, and we've all got our own mix of that. So thank you so much. I would love to know, we talked a little bit about your program, but tell us a little bit more about how we can find you and where we can get to know you a little more.
Well, first, I just want to thank everyone for listening to this and for being present and wherever you are, whether you're walking or in the car or doing something while listening to this, I just want to thank you for listening, because every single person who is empowered in this area, I believe, is helping us collectively become much more joyful as a society. I think that this is something that we can really say at this point in time, let's not have this feeling anymore. There are so many things we don't have in our control, but this is something that we actually can learn and empower ourselves with. And so this is a movement that you're now a part of. I call it the Profit for Joy movement. So I want to thank you for that. You can find me on YouTube. If you just look up Amber Duggar, you'll find me on YouTube. I post there pretty much every week, some kind of tip or conversation around money. Also on Instagram, it's profit.with.amber. And if you're wanting to calculate your own revenue goal, we do have a revenue goal calculator that you can download. So it's at amberduggar.com/calculator. And you can go there and you can download it. And it's a ton of fun to put in different numbers and see what comes up.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah, we'll make sure to put that calculator in the links and also your YouTube video about YNAB.
Yeah.
We'll put that in there as well. And then all, you know, your YouTube link and all of that. So thank you again so much, Amber. This has been great.
Lauren, thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun.
Thanks so much for hanging out with me today. Come connect with me over on Instagram at Lauren Wrighton or in the Podcast Manager Mastermind Facebook group. And let me know what you liked about this episode. I love, love, love hearing your guys' feedback and what is resonating with you. You can always find the links and resources mentioned in the show over at laurenwrighton.com. Special thanks to my amazing podcast manager, Marcy Page, on producing this episode. All right, that's it. Until next time, I'll be cheering you on.